Exploring the Word is brought to you by Reclaiming America for Christ and the Fairview Baptist Church in Edmond, Oklahoma.
We welcome you to the radio ministry of Fairview Baptist Church in Edmond. We invite you to join with us for today's Exploring the Word. Here's Pastor Paul Blair.
This is Pastor Paul Blair. Thank you for being a part of our ministry here at Exploring the Word, and thank you for being with us as we continue our series on God's providential hand in America. Today is a continuation of Lesson 6. Actually, this is part 2 of a 2-part message on the Declaration of Independence. One of the greatest untruths that has been taught in our educational system is that our founding fathers were a bunch of rebels rebelling against government. Ladies and gentlemen, that is not true. Colonial charters had been broken by the English. Legislatures that had been implemented by our legal rights through our charters had been dissolved. Trade had been suppressed. Taxes had been levied against the colonists without representation, which is like unto stealing. If I can take any of your possessions without your permission, we call that stealing. When the government does it, we call it taxation. Either way, it's still not right, and it wasn't legally right. As even in established English law, there was no such thing as taxation without representation, but that's what was taking place here in the colonies. It was also against English law to have standing armies housed in homes of citizens, and that's also what was taking place here in the colonies. Even though we weren't at war with France or with the Indians, the British Army was stationed in American homes, clearly a violation of the 1689 English Bill of Rights and clearly trying to establish tyranny here in the colonies. Other great offenses were being enacted, intolerable acts, in fact, as they were called. But one of the most grievous of these acts was called the Declaratory Act, which basically reserved the right for Great Britain to do whatever they wanted to do, including their plans to reestablish the Church of England over the colonies. And what was the main reason that the founders came to America to begin with? Well, it was religious liberty and civil liberty, and now both of those were just at the brink of being taken away. Well, I hope that you'll enjoy today's session as we continue Part 6, the Declaration of Independence. We can't afford to waste shot and powder. We don't have enough. And 3,000 of the finest trained troops in the world marched up Breed's Hill. Fortunately, we had the high ground. But 3,000 combat experienced trained men against our group. We repulsed their first attack. They regathered, stunned that these farmers had the audacity to stand against them. We repulsed the second attack, and they were ready to withdraw, but they couldn't for pride. And finally, on the third attack, only because we ran out of ammunition, they were able to take the high ground, literally in hand-to-hand combat. But they paid a great price. Of the 3,000 redcoats, over 1,000 gave their lives that day, including Major Pitcairn, who was the villain of the Battle of Lexington. Now, while all this was taking place, the Olive Branch Petition, remember, we didn't have email back in this day. The Olive Branch Petition was signed in Philadelphia and sent by ship to England, arriving in England on September the 21st. King George III refused even to receive it. And on the 23rd, he declared that the colonies were in open rebellion. Tensions continued to rise as both sides prepared for war. Conflicts continued, and in March 1776, General Washington, in a brilliant maneuver, brought cannon cross-country in the middle of winter from Fort Ticonderoga and placed them on Dorchester Heights, assuming the high ground and taking control of Boston, and the British were forced to leave. Folks, it was now obvious. The separation from England was unavoidable. Now in June, as the Continental Congress was continuing to meet, recognizing that their last letter, the olive branch that they had extended to King George, had been refused, a resolution in Congress to dissolve their political connection with Great Britain was offered by Richard Henry Lee, a delegate from Virginia.
It was seconded by John Adams, a delegate from Massachusetts. This debate was fierce, barely passed to discuss the crafting of a document for separation with a vote of 7 states to 6 states. Richard Henry Lee made this impassioned speech. He said, "Why then, sir? Why do we no longer delay? Why still deliberate? Let this happy day give birth to an American republic. Let her arise not to devastate and to conquer, but to reestablish the reign of peace and law." What were these men trying to do? They were trying to reestablish the law, ladies and gentlemen. I hope we understand the danger that even we live in this generation. Modern secular humanism teaches that man is by nature good. No, he's not. Bible says that man is sinful by his very nature, and man can't be trusted. And a tyrant will most certainly trample the rights of the citizenry at the loss of great blood. Consider the history in the recent century of Russia, the tens of millions that were murdered in a tyrannical government. Consider the last century and recent history in communist China, the tens of millions that were murdered under a tyrannical government. These men knew what they were doing. They were trying to reestablish law in the face of a tyrant who was the one that was guilty of breaking the law. They weren't rebels. King George had rebelled from English law and from the colonial charters. Lee went on to say, "The eyes of Europe are fixed upon us. She demands of us a living example of freedom that may exhibit a contrast in the felicity of the citizens to the ever-increasing tyranny which desolates her polluted shores. She invites us, Europe does, to prepare an asylum where the unhappy may find solace and the persecuted repose. If we are not this day wanting in our duty, the names of the American legislators of 1776 will be placed by posterity at the side of all those whose memory has been and ever will be dear to virtuous men and good citizens." And most certainly, those names have been placed there. Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and Roger Sherman and Robert Livingston were assigned to the committee to draft the Declaration. It was reported to Congress on June the 28th, drafted largely by Jefferson, but with many verbal alterations. The declarations gave a clear and comprehensive explanation of their actions. It was passed on July 2nd, unopposed, and the final version was adopted on July the 4th, 1776. Copies were commissioned to be printed and spread throughout the land, and the first public reading was on July the 8th. Read with me, having understood the background of all these things that have taken place in these first 5 lessons that we've done on God's providential hand in America, read with me this declaration. "When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitled them." By the way, we'll come back and define that momentarily. "A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men," which, by the way, that's exactly what Romans 13 says. "And these governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed." It's of the people, by the people, and for the people. "That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its power in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object. Events is a design to reduce them under absolute despotism. It is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies. And such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. Boy, sounds like much what we're dealing with today, doesn't it? Trying to wear us out, so we'll just give up. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his... I love that. These that opposed him like men. He said he has dissolved these representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of people. He has refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all dangers of invasion from without and convulsions from within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws of naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations here, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. Guess who they're going to be loyal to? He has erected a multitude of new offices. Boy, does that sound familiar. Can anybody say czar? And sent hither swarms of officers. Can anybody say what? 14 or 15,000 new IRS officers with the new health care. And the swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution. And unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. For quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial for punishment of any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world. Now, by the way, what are we taught in school that their whole motive was? What was the whole cause of our rebellion? Taxation without representation. Have you seen it listed yet? Of their list of grievances? Now, do you understand? It was not about the payment. It was about the principle. As I said a few weeks ago, if the king has the right to take 1% of your possessions without asking you, then you have officially become his slave. If he can take anything from you without your consent, then he can take everything from you without your consent. And again, the Boston Tea Party was actually a tax cut if the colonists had accepted the point of buying tea from the East India Tea Company. But it was the principle that they stood on, recognizing that their liberty and their children's liberty was at risk. Finally, here, number 17, it says, "For imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule over these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring them invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny. He could not raise soldiers in his own country to come and fight America because the average person knew that they were wrong with what was going on with the colonies. He ultimately had to go to small provinces in Germany, hence the Hessian soldiers, some 25,000 paid to come and fight King George's war here in the colonies. It had already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens, taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections among us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity. We have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war and in peace friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America and General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world, God Almighty, for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are and of a right ought to be free and independent states, and they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do, and for the support of this declaration with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, again appealing unto God. We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. These men were not rebels. They held to the law and were defenders of the law, and their every act was well thought out and prayed over, adhering to the law of nature and nature's God, the established law in England, and the law that had been established here in the colonies by right of charters, all of which had been violated by King George III. And the colonists, after appeal, after appeal, after appeal, claimed that God gave them the authority to separate from this tyranny. Those phrases that we've seen there, the laws of nature, folks, that's not poetic prose from the 18th century. That's a legal term, a legal definition. Sir William Blackstone's Commentaries on Law defines it as such. By the way, Blackstone was the authority of English law in the 18th century. Said, man, considered as a creature, must necessarily be subject to the laws of his creator, for he is entirely a dependent being. And consequently, as man depends absolutely upon his maker for everything, it is necessary that he should in all points conform to his maker's will. This will of his maker is called the law of nature. The doctrines thus delivered we call the revealed or divine law, and they are to be found only in the Holy Scriptures. He went on to talk about the pursuit of happiness. Life, no government, no man or government can take your life arbitrarily. You may forfeit your life if you commit murder. Talked about liberty being an unalienable right that no country or man can take away. It's given by God. You can't be enslaved without due process and just cause. And the pursuit of happiness. That we've twisted into defining everything. Anything that you want in order to be happy, this gives you liberty, doesn't it? No, it doesn't. The pursuit of happiness, again, defined by Blackstone's commentary on law, says this: for he, being God, who has so intimately connected us, so inseparably interwoven the laws of eternal justice with the happiness of each individual, cannot be attained but by observing the former, obeying the laws of eternal justice. And if the former be punctually obeyed, if you obey God's law, then it cannot but induce the latter, then you will be happy. In consequence of which mutual connection of justice and human happiness, he has not perplexed the law of nature with a multitude of abstracted rules and precepts referring merely to the fitness or unfitness of things, as some have vainly surmised. He hasn't just written a bunch of thou shalt nots and thou shalts just at a whim, but has graciously reduced the rule of obedience to this one paternal precept that man should pursue his own true and substantial happiness. This is the foundation of what we call ethics or natural law. We have the God-given right to practice this in every way, including Ecclesiastes 3, where it talks about the right to own your own property. These men were now gathered in Philadelphia, had crafted and approved this document. These weren't old men. Benjamin Franklin was the only one that was old. 18 of these 56 were under 40. 3 were in their 20s. Each of these men had more to lose from the revolution than they had to gain from it. But they wanted and insisted on doing that which was right. John Hancock, one of the richest men in America, already had a 500-pound bounty on his head. He signed the declaration in enormous letters saying that he wanted to make sure His Majesty could read his name without glasses and could now double the reward. Benjamin Franklin wryly noted, "Indeed, we must all hang together. Otherwise, we shall most assuredly hang separately." Folks, as these men, all prosperous, all doing well in their own situation, signed their names to this document, they were signing their own death warrants. If they had been captured by the British, they would have been tried for treason and at the least would have been hung. One professor of history said that they would have been drawn and quartered. And just before they had died, they would have been hung. And then after their death, their body and bones would have been burned. Would you have signed it? Fat Benjamin Harrison of Virginia is said to have told Tiny Elbridge Gerry of Massachusetts. He said, "With me, it'll all be over in a minute. But you'll be dancing on air an hour after I'm gone." Though the resolution was formally adopted on July the 4th, it was not until July the 8th that two of the states authorized their delegates to sign, and it was not until August the 2nd that the signers met at Philadelphia to actually put their names on the declaration. William Ellery, a delegate from Rhode Island, was curious to see what the other signers' responses would be, and he gazed at their faces as they signed this document, a supreme act of personal courage. He said by his account he saw some men sign quickly, but no face was he able to discern any real fear. Stephen Hopkins, Ellery's colleague from Rhode Island, was a man past 60, but as he signed with a shaking pen, he declared, "My hand trembles, but my heart does not." On July 8th, the Liberty Bell rang out calling the citizens of Philadelphia to Constitution Hall, where the Declaration was read publicly for the first time. Inscribed on the Liberty Bell is the scripture text, Leviticus 25:10, which states, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." Ladies and gentlemen, our founders were not rebels. Our founders were not atheists and deists. Our founders were incredible men, willing to sacrifice their own possessions and their own lives for their children and their children's children and their children's children's children. These were great men of faith that spent every day on their knees in prayer, seeking God's intervention and guidance. And as they pronounced their independence, Leviticus 25:10 rang throughout the colonies. Thank God for His providential hand in America. We thank you for being a part of our ministry here at Exploring the Word, and we hope that you enjoyed this lesson on the Declaration of Independence as we are continuing our series entitled God's Providential Hand in America. Again, if you're interested in purchasing a set of this series for your very own, those are available. Just call us at our church office, 405-348-1745. We have the 12 Sermon Set DVD series for $29.95. and the 12 Sermon Set CD series for $19.95. Wonderful opportunity to listen as you're driving, or actually to teach your children at home or homeschool or even in an adult Bible class or Wednesday night services. Wonderful opportunity to teach our current generation about the great faith of our founding era and how God played such a huge role in the establishment and protection and provision of this, the most wonderful Christian nation that has ever been established on the planet Earth. Again, those materials are available here at our church office. Please call and we'll instruct you on how you can get them. Well, thank you so much for being a part of our ministry here at Exploring the Word, and we look forward to being with you next time as we continue our series on God's providential hand in America.
You've been listening to the teaching ministry of Fairview Baptist Church in Edmond. We hope that today's journey in God's Word has been a blessing to you. You can find more sermons and resources at our church's website, www.fairviewbaptistedmond.org, or call 405-348-1745. Join us again each weekday for Exploring the Word from Fairview Baptist Church in Edmond.